You are now listening to The Reality Is. The Reality Is.
No, I'm glad too, man. It's for minorities, but white people, don't be scared. Asians, Hispanics, you want to come on the show, hit us up. I talk to anybody about everything. Just be
like, these niggas is out here fucking these girls and putting it on Pornhub. At 8 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday with a heart on, she gets up and she turns on the church. And I was thinking, that's how I'm gonna get some head or something. Start to think, niggas is straight out here raw dicking and choking, motherfucker.
God has his hand on you. Why you sitting there?
That was pretty good, man. It just kind of came
out. You can't be squeamish when giving head. I mean, you got a dick in your mouth. Like, how much more gutter can you
think
be?
Think about niggas, right? Like, pussy's a big deal, niggas. Just period, point blank, just what it is.
The reality is.
Have you ever cheated on somebody?
No.
I have.
We know.
I never wanted to cheat on anybody.
Shit happens, right?
I never did.
So, if we have a little bit more, you know, the people who have a little bit more can give a little bit of time to people who have a little bit less.
Yeah.
We can equalize the situation. And one day, you know, regardless of what the government does, we will have systems in place to take care of ourselves.
You are now listening to The Reality Is. The Reality Is.
What up, world? This is Anthony Roberts, host of The Reality Is Where Filtering Becomes Extinct. Today's show is brought to you by Blog Talk Radio, your voice, your independence, your platform. So join us as we work to build a listener and podcaster-centric podcast ecosystem by going to www.blogtalkradio.com. This episode is also brought to you by Take Action Apparel and Gear, the brainchild of actor Gabriel Silva, to stand up against bullying through fashion and accessories that let you be you. You can be a patron and support this cause by going to www.takeactiongear.com and purchase something to support the cause. Now, today we've been off the air for what, about 2 weeks, Artesia? You got to bring that mic up. Come on, quit playing like you ain't never been in here before.
Don't get scared.
Get scared. We got company, but don't start acting like that today.
No, I wasn't planning on being on this episode.
No, you weren't.
Okay, but we haven't been in the studio for 2 weeks. We've done an episode in between.
We did a real spill. We'll be doing another one today. I sound like I'm my levels are high. Am I too high? Okay, maybe it's just in my head.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got a guest in the house today, man, from Detox, which is Dad Talk About Life, Kids, and Stuff. We have one of the co-hosts on there. Are you the main host or co-host?
We are, we're all equal. Okay. We're all equal co-hosts.
That's a good thing.
I like that.
So this is Joe Shaw.
Yes.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
To The Reality Is. What I love about Joe is, how many episodes have you listened to already?
All of them.
I had my phone up to show you the list. I mean, I closed it.
But
I went back. I mean, well, I'll tell you what I do at work is I sit at a computer and I do a lot of processing, right? And so I always look for podcasts that I can kind of have on in the background and gives me a good pace. And some people, it has good content, but it's up and down. It's all over and I can't listen to it. But y'all's podcast is a good base level that it's just like, and it's engaging conversation. So even when I'm like focused on something else, it's filtering into my subconsciousness and it leaves me marinating on different ideas and topics.
I like that.
And for those who don't know, Joe is white and we're okay with that. This, you know what? Is Joe the first white person that's been on this show?
I think so.
And the reason I say that is because I always hear people say, why don't you have more Hispanics? Why don't you have more whites? And or I get asked, is this a black only show? And I'm like, this ain't BET. Right. Like, I don't care who comes on my show. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I don't care who comes on my show. It's all about, if you come on, can you be transparent? Yep. What are you bringing to the table? And then how are you going to perform when you're behind the mic? I can already, Joe reminds me of NPR just by his voice. It sounds very professional. And he doesn't use the uhs and the ums. And I'm glad to have you here, man.
I appreciate it. I'm glad to be here. I'm
so
excited.
I met you through Frank.
Yes.
And everybody knows Frank. You know, I crack jokes all the time on the podcast about Frank. Frank
man, kind of
melanin origin. Yeah, yeah. So that's how I met Joe, man. But I wanted to talk about, like, what made you want to get into podcasting? Because when I was researching and I looked at your LinkedIn page, I was like, okay, like, your job that you're showing now is, like, you doing podcasting.
Right.
So what made you really want to get into it, and how did Detox Podcast come about?
So that's a good question. So when I first became a new dad, all I did was I went, I'm going to be a very involved father, and I want to know what resources are out there for me when I have questions, when I have concerns, just kind of prepping, understanding what's coming up. Mm-hmm. And there's very few dad-only resources. There's a lot for moms,
right,
and there's a lot for parents in general, But what I found in my personal experience is dads that I know, including myself, that want to be involved, when they can't find the resources, they either push through it and just say, whatever, I'll just take what I can get. And then there are others that will fade into the background and say, I'm going to defer to the mom and let her dictate how parenting should go because I don't feel confident in my abilities. And so I said, this isn't right. So when I became a new dad, I reached out to my buddy Galan, who's another co-host, and he has a daughter that's 2.5 years older than my oldest child. And I said, hey, what do I expect? What's the birth going to look like? What are some things? And he's like, well, the best thing I can tell you is that this is my experience and it could be totally different, but here's something for you to at least take with you when you prep. And that was helpful. And so I found myself going back to him more and more. And then when my daughter was 1.5, I had other new dads that were reaching out to me as well on similar stuff. And I went, you know, there should be a way for us to consolidate our knowledge and put it out there for people to be able to grab and use whenever.
Yeah.
And I knew Galan had done a podcast previously and he'd had experience. And I said, hey, what if we just do a podcast? Let's just talk. Let's just put our stories out there and advice. And then people can take from that what they want. And he said, that's a great idea. And let me pull in my buddy John, who has no kids. And I said, wait a minute, what? This is a dad podcast. And he said, no, John, who is his best friend, did the podcast with him before, his old podcast. And he said, John has no kids, is single, has no desire to have kids, but he can comment on the choices we make with our kids, and it provides a good, engaging dialogue. Right. So
I need you to, and I know we talked about it before about bringing them all in. The studio wasn't big enough, so I was like, we're going to get you to filter them in.
Sure.
I want to definitely work on doing that soon. And I think his podcast is a great idea because, like you said, everything is servicing women. Mm-hmm. And it's nothing against that.
Right.
You know, girl power, whatever the case may be. But I talk to her all the time about how I feel like men are left out. Mm-hmm. And now in this movement of feminism where women are picking up steam, and I think they should be paid the same if they're doing the same job, so on and so forth. I do agree with those things. But I think with the Me Too movements and everything else going on, it's like, but what about the good dudes out there?
Right.
Because y'all, like, we get clumped into a pile of ain't shit, and we can't do nothing, and we ain't good for nothing besides having sex and giving money. And it's like, but it is good brothers out there.
And that's what I was going to say, even for me, as a reminder, when I had my kids dealing with their father, my ex-husband, he started to get a lot of shine by him just simply being involved. And I was like, he's not doing anything but what he's supposed to be doing. Right. But it's so many guys that don't even do that.
Especially in the black demographic. Yeah. In the black demographic, we talk about it all the time, how we feel like this is weird. Because normally when we talk about race, we never have a white person in the room to actually address it. Right. And that's what I like about Joe, because like I said, as he went back through podcasts, he would check back with me and be like, hey, I didn't even know this, or this is great, so on and so forth. Yep. But in the black community, like, what was my thought? I know you sipping. Are you drunk yet?
I'm not drunk. I am inebriated.
So what was I saying? Because I went off point.
You're about to make some comparison between black and white.
And but that's not real happy. Yeah.
Okay, so it does happen because black fathers, you know, a lot of times they leave the household, and a lot of the state of black American things that are going on is because of black men.
Mm-hmm.
But it's sometimes, and this is not an excuse, because sometimes it is because of the circumstances that the white forefathers placed on them systemically, you know, and then some of it is you become aware of it, and some of them are just still doing the shit.
Exactly.
You're still leaving your kids high and dry. You know, we'll get to that on the next episode about my father, you know, but it's like, we got to do better.
Right.
But men don't get enough. And it was one thing when I first started dating you, I remember seeing how engaged her ex-husband was with the kids, and I was like, he's a good guy.
Right. Yeah.
Like, but not just because he's black. I was like, he's a good guy.
He's a good guy.
Even you in the beginning, though, you were like, he's just doing what he's supposed to do. And that's something that I had to get past, too.
I feel like he was trying to get back to the box.
He probably was.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And he was. I feel like he was.
I mean, that's okay.
Like, you know, nigga, just take care of your kids. You know? No, I'm
leave that to me.
Yeah.
But no, that's something that I had to remind myself of, too, because as a mom, it's like you automatically expect things to be a certain way.
Yeah.
And so when you feel left out of certain situations where people are on social media like, oh, you're such a great dad, and oh, this and oh, that, it's like, you know what, let him have his shine because he is a good guy.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that also I talked to my wife about this, and I think I'm pretty sure I put it out on the GroupMe one time. I asked a question like, should people get recognized for doing the things that they're supposed to do, you know, because it was a conversation between me and my wife where like I'll do something or something to be done And then she'll say, or she might be commenting on somebody else. She might say, well, that's what they're supposed to be doing. Oh, that's the dad. He's picking them up. Like, she goes out of town. Like, my wife be traveling.
Yeah.
And so her friends always asking her, hey, where the kids at? They're with their father. Mm-hmm. What do you mean with it? Right. You know, are they okay with the dad? What do you mean are they okay? If they weren't okay, I wouldn't have married them. You
right.
know?
Yeah.
But it's like people have an issue with giving people credit for the things that they feel like they're supposed to be doing. And I think we have to be a little bit more careful about
that. But we're all supposed to be doing something. So it's like, you know, like when you go to work, you're supposed to do your job.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But we all know the only thing that makes people happier than higher pay is being appreciated.
Right.
So it's simply about even though you're doing your job, it's hard work to be a father. It's hard work to be a mother. Mm-hmm. I'm neither one of them, but I see it and it's hard work. So you talked about modern parenting styles.
Yep.
And I had a couple of questions because I'm not a parent.
Sure.
You know, but I do a lot of times when we're watching TV, you know, and the black people in the room will get it, and maybe the Hispanic, the Mexican in the other room. We will not say Hispanic.
No, we will.
Yeah, but the Mexican in the other room, maybe the parenting styles are different to where sometimes I know when I'm watching a TV show, like maybe, I don't know, like something like a white show, and it's white kids and it's white families.
Right.
And it's like, a white kid will say something to their parent, and I'm like, fuck, not in a black house.
Yeah.
That shit is not happening. But as I've gotten older, because, you know, I was raised where, you know, what is it, spare the rod,
spoil the child.
Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, you got your ass whooped if you did something wrong. You go pick out your own switch. And as I got older, I was like, the way white people parent their kids is not bad. It's just about how much hand-holding are you doing.
Mm-hmm.
But the way sometimes white parents I've seen discipline our children, like talking to them and just letting them know what they did wrong instead of whooping their ass like they're a dog after they piss within a certain time frame to say, well, I'm whooping you because you pissed on the floor.
Right.
Mm-hmm. How do you parent your child as far or discipline your children as far as, like, you know, if they do something wrong, is it, you know, old school, get your own switch, or is it more, let me let you know why I'm mad at you and, you know, go from there?
No, that's a really good question. That was something that I know we struggled about when we were first coming into kind of the conflict situation. And what we kept coming back to and what we've seen works for our kids, and I always like to preface this on my podcast, what I do can change, you know, and also what I do does not work for everybody else.
Yeah.
But what I do is I will sit down and I'll talk to, not always sit down and have a full conversation, but I'll explain. I'll say, look, we're upset with you because you didn't follow instructions. Like, that's what we're always like. You didn't follow instructions. We set out the plan. We kind of treat them as like, we're managers in a company and they're the employees. And we're like, look, these were the guidelines. We told you about this. We gave you a warning. And now these are the consequences. You lose a privilege. Yeah. So we take away privileges.
Yeah.
And then that holds more weight from what we've seen.
Yeah.
There's been a couple times where it's like, you know, tempers get mad. She's not listening. And you do like a little pop.
Yeah.
And then the times that I've done that versus the times that I've just sat down and talked with her and taken away a privilege, like she reads two books before bed and I'll be like, all right, I'm gonna take away one book.
Yeah.
Then the results are more, she's more likely to not do it the next time.
See, that threw me off. Like,
it's because it's a cause and effect. Like, we were teaching the
black kid, be like, you want to take a book? Cool. Ain't worry about it. As long as you ain't taking a video game.
Yeah. Lead a video game.
I know. Because she raised, that's how she raises her kids the same way.
I'm a talker. My kids know if they get a whooping from me, and I don't even remember when I whooped my kids.
You whooped Tania a couple of months back, and you called me crying.
Yeah, I did.
And I was like, what the fuck is going on around here?
If they get one from me, they know that they've done the worst thing possible. Mm-hmm. But I'm a talker. I like to explain what they did wrong and talk about why they did it and tell them why they shouldn't. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm the same way too, and I think that
you whoop your kids.
No,
your kids are too beautiful, man.
No, I will whoop them.
See, that's the thing. You can't let the beauty fool you.
I know, because his little girl though, his little girl would have me, man.
Yeah, you'll never touch him if it goes like that. But I was telling somebody the other day. I was talking to another parent, and they sounded real frustrated about the things that were going on with their children. And I told them when it comes to the subject of disciplining, like whooping, I told them just to make sure they have the distinction. Make sure that if you are going to whoop them, you're whooping them for something they did. You're not whooping them because of the level of your frustration about what they did.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
I think a lot of parents, especially in the black community, will whoop them out of frustration of how we're feeling.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, a lot of times that I've seen in other parents is the fact that when you get to that point, a lot of parents start feeling embarrassed or if they're being called into question. And the
worst, you're talking physically?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Right. Yeah. And so the worst thing you can do is give into those feelings and emotions and take it out on the child. The best thing you can do is say, we're going to discuss this at home, haul them out of wherever they are.
Yeah.
you know, perfect example, my kid threw a fit in the middle of the store once and I was in the checkout line. I couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, you're not supposed to throw a fit. We're in public. This is not what we do.
And see, those are the prime times where black people will see y'all and be like, this nigga talking to her?
No, I did the same thing because my son did it.
Grab that
like,
collar.
Yeah, but I just gave him a look.
But you know, we've had those times. But you know, we've had times where we, you know, like, or it's even been videos, you know, where black people are in stores and it's like they're videoing white people talking to their kids. And it's like, you talking to this little motherfucker like he's an adult.
But I tell you what, my child, like I talk to her like she's an adult, and I've done that since she's barely been able to talk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we were at a party the other day and she was speaking in full fluid sentences, having a full conversation with everybody, all the adults.
Yeah.
And people were like, is she five? And I'm like, she's two.
She's two.
It helps.
She's two.
And I know it does, because I've had conversations like when I was doing, when I was going to school for teaching at first and I was doing my internship. And I remember going to schools, like talking to the black kids, and it's nothing. And this is not me talking about black people. It's just talking to them like, it's a lot of it's a lot of us, it's a lot of not sure what they're thinking. Well, they don't know how to express themselves.
A lot of times they're afraid
like,
to.
I know, but, and it's like with you talking to a white kid, I literally have had several full-fledged conversations with little 5 and 6 year old white boys and girls, and I'm like, this little motherfucker's intelligent.
Exactly.
Like, they know what they want, they know what, and I've always said that about white people. A lot of times, even if you get out of your mindset and get out of your head as black people, you gotta give your kids exposure. Like, white people will let their kids go on trips to Europe for 2 weeks at 16. We like, you going to college at 18 and you talking about going out of state, you got mothers who will hold and cling onto these sons, and they making them bitch made men because they're not, you know, they're not taking, knowing how to take care of anything because somebody's still pampering them. So I've always applauded to an extent how white people raise their kids because it's advanced. Right. It's progressive.
One of the criticisms I will give to other white parents that I see and hang out with on a daily basis, and don't call them out to their face, but I'll do it here. Is the fact
Thank you, Joe.
Yeah, you're in, no problem. Is the fact that a lot of parents will not talk down to their children, but they will act as if their opinion is not at the level of everybody else's. And so they will talk, and you see this earnestness and frustration in the kid, and they're trying to tell a story or get a point across. And the parent will say, that's nice. Go over here. Go do this. Very dismissive. And I've seen, as the kids grow older, they start becoming a lot more insecure, but introverted, a lot more introverted and afraid to express their opinions. And then, you know, other white people, it's, oh, let's just cover it up and move on.
Right.
Just cover it up and move on.
Yeah.
And not address it.
I think one of the problems too, because I deal with juveniles, and a lot of times I try to talk to them and just have a conversation with them that I would have with my kids, because my kids have full-blown conversations too. But one of the things that are glaring to me is even 15 and 16-year-olds just having a simple conversation about, you know, what it is that you want to do with yourself in life and your future. You know, just articulate it for me. Just have a conversation.
Right.
And they literally will say, you know, I know what is in my mind, but I don't know how to say it, you know. And I say, well, okay, let's work on that. Because you have to be able to communicate with people, period.
Right.
You know what I mean? You have to be able to get your point across. You have to be able to express yourself. And these are just lessons that they just haven't learned.
Right. Yeah. I you know what, though? What scares me about kids, and I'm sure, or having kids, and you'll know what I'm talking about once I say it. I always think about when I see like the racism in this world and how it's continuously seemingly getting worse.
Yeah.
I'm like, I can't bring a kid into this world, because I'm such a protector, and you see me go to bat for her a lot of times. And it's like, we're not even together now, but it's like, I still protect her, because it's like, that's how strong I feel about the people who are in my circle. So it's like, to have a kid, I just be like, and she said it before too, when it's at the height, like Ferguson, she was like, oh my God, I'm going to jail or I'm dead if somebody hurts or kills my kid.
And
it's like, how can you not feel that? Like, to feel that kind of, bro, I don't want that. And it's difficult.
But
like,
it's a beautiful feeling.
To have kids. Yeah, I know. It's just, because I know, you know, when we went home this weekend for the funeral, I saw my nieces and nephews, and I went down there with things, and I came back with none of those things. Like, if my niece wore my jacket and I tried to get it back, she was like, I want to keep this. You can get it next time.
Right.
Then what else was I gave away?
You gave your handkerchief away.
My handkerchief.
Somebody was crying.
Yeah, and I was just like, I'm coming down. And
then,
like,
you took a picture after the fact, and you were like, damn, I needed my handkerchief to make the outfit
to make
pop.
The outfit pop. Yeah. But it's like those. Yeah, but it was like those little things to where it's like, and like my mom always says, you need to have a girl.
So yeah, you're going to have to.
Because it's like, I am, you know, rough around the edges. You know, I am very harsh. I'm brute. You know, my niece was telling me the other day, she's, how old is it now? 14?
No,
15? 16? Oh, she's 16 now. She was telling me that she listens to the podcast. And I was like, What? Wait, I don't know if you should be. I don't know if you need to know me this way.
Yeah. That part.
And she was like, she was like, Uncle, you crazy.
Yeah. But then I thought about it and I was like, you know what? The way I would parent my kids, and I've always said this, I would be like you. Like, not to be funny, if I curse, like when we would be in the car and her kids would listen to the music I was playing and it would be curse words, and she was like, turn it off. And I was like, I'm pretty sure Tony's letting them
but
listen
no,
to it.
But no, that's the thing, because I was riding in the car one day and a song came on and my kids were in the back seat and they were singing it. And I was like, where is this from? And my son, he was like, oh, Dad lets us listen to it. And I was like, you're not supposed to. He was like, Ma, Dad already told us it's entertainment only. We know the difference. We're right. good. So now I'm a little bit more lenient about the music that I let them listen to.
Right. And the thing is that, you know, my kids are the same way. I do pay attention to the type of music I listen to, or, you know, because most of the time it's just, and I can admit this, more so with my girl than my boy. But yeah. when I'm with them, I just is straight instrumental classical music. Yeah. But at the same time, you know, I know that they know what cuss words are because I've heard them say them by accident a couple of times. But we've had the conversation.
Oh, by
about,
accident. Huh?
Yeah. I'm like, you said what? Hold on, I got to tell you the story.
I'm not gonna claim accident on my part.
One time my little boy got in trouble because he was at school and he called the little girl a bitch. I was like, a bitch?
Whoa.
Oh, yeah. Boy,
yeah, my little boy did.
Hey,
but hold up, listen. One. But you know, I was worried because I was about to ask him, where did you hear that, bro?
In front of the principal, be like, don't answer.
I didn't want him to say, answer. Daddy, I heard you say it, or I heard it in one of the songs you listened to. He said, one of my friends said, I was like, yes.
Yeah.
Let's talk when we get home. But we had the conversation about, you know, certain words that are used by adults that are not appropriate for children and things like that. So if we watch a movie, they hear a song with some cuss words, they know to the level of, okay, those are not the words that I'm supposed to use in regular conversation.
Yeah.
And that's going to get me in trouble.
So Joe, how do you teach your kids to be diverse? I know that's one of the topics we, you know, discuss. Right. Because I think it was my sophomore year in college, I wrote a paper about racism and interracial dating. Right. And I think I've talked about it on the podcast where all that semester, I think I had like a 3.9 GPA at that point. I had made A's and B's in this class. But the first time I wrote about that paper, in that topic, I got a D. And then she was like, I'll let you rewrite it. Then I rewrote it. Didn't change the content, really just kind of fancied up the words. She gave me a C. And I was like, why is it so hard? She let me rewrite it again. She let me rewrite that paper 3 times. Mm-hmm. I never got higher than a C+, man. And it was because of, I felt like the content in which I was talking about. And the way I started my paper off about racism was like, how can we explain racism or say that it should be here when you could put a 2-year-old black kid, white kid, Asian kid, Hispanic kid, or a Mexican kid in a sandbox? They're going to play. If one of them falls and starts crying, the other one's going to pick them up. Like, it's the parents that starts to say, don't hang around Julio. Exactly. Don't hang around, you know, Jeff. Don't hang around Brian, whoever, so on. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you teach your kids, or how are you trying to raise your kids to know truly what diversity is and not just be using it like these companies are throwing it around?
Right. The biggest thing for us has been... We have a very diverse stable of friends that they're around all the time, whether it's gay, straight, black, white, Hispanic, Latino. Sorry, I remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Good save. Good save.
But we make the point to, we already had a diverse stable of friends, and so we thought the easiest way to teach diversity is we normalize it doesn't matter who you hang out with. You hang out with good people regardless of skin color or sexual orientation.
Yeah.
And that has started to take root in the fact that she just turned three, but we're starting to see that she's not showing a preference one way or the other. She's just hanging out, and the daycare that she goes to it's a very diverse group of kids, and so we like the fact that she's around a lot of different people, a lot of different incomes, I guess you would say, and a lot of different just life experiences. And the biggest thing additionally is this is the part that I struggle with, right, is she's good, and I know my son will be good, and my wife and I are great, but we have family that are racist, and they choose not to believe that they're racist.
Yeah.
And you can't...
Well, I'm glad you said that, because that's the thing.
No,
they be knowing they are, and they'll be like, no, I'm not... Don't... It's
how
like so offensive
call
to call a white
racist.
Person racist,
because,
but it's like... Yeah, go
because
ahead.
Because, they're thinking, like, racism is on all of... Like, everything is on a spectrum, right? And so... A lot of people, especially relatives that we have, are on the spectrum, and they lean more towards racism, but they think if they're not putting on the hoods and lighting people on fire, they're not racist.
They're not racist.
It's like that is the furthest extreme of the spectrum.
Yeah.
And it goes all the way back in little comments you make about President Obama.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Little comments you're making about the guy down the street.
Yeah.
My grandma used to say, her nurse that she had for years, she said, "Lisa's so great for a black woman." Yeah. I went, "Hold up, pump the brakes. Yeah, what did you just
say? What does
say?
That mean?"
And she didn't consider herself racist. Mm-hmm. And so what I have to realize is that every generation is trying to be less racist than the one before them, but they still need help.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so the way I've chosen, because my wife and I got into this conversation the other day about how do you stop racism in the workplace? Like those microaggressions that happen in day-to-day conversation. And I said, what I do, because of my privilege as a white straight male, is when I'm around a group of white males and they say something about Usain Bolt when it was the Olympics, or they say something about President Obama, I go, "Bro, are you really going to be like that right now? Yeah. Are you really going to be racist?" And they're like, "I'm not racist." And I went, "That comment was racist. Yeah. You might want to rethink that." And I do it kind of offhandedly, but I just lay it out there. Then they internalize it, and then I don't hear those comments before. And my wife said, "Well, they would just not say it around you." And I went, "Maybe so, but they're thinking about it. If they're not saying it around me, then they're thinking about it." And that's what I want. That's how you can affect change with these people who are
holding
racist.
Them accountable. Right.
Yeah.
Holding people accountable is the biggest thing. Because it's like, I know I have a couple of friends that are white, and I'm like, I would love to be in a room like a white dude and hear how they talk about certain things. And like you said, it's not always like, "I'm going to use this. It's an explicit podcast," but you ain't got to say like, "I hate niggers" or "fuck niggers." You ain't got to say that, like you said, to be racist.
That's extreme.
You can be the type just like, "I have a white daughter. I don't want her dating a black man because... if it ain't because he's a bad dude, he's a shitty person, or whatever, then I don't fucking want to hear it because that's a prejudice that you're about to display."
Right.
The biggest thing that we heard a couple years ago, every setting was, "Hey, all lives matter." And my rebuttal every single time was, "We don't act like they do."
Yeah. Right.
When we act like they do, then they will.
Then they will. Yeah.
And then they would pause, and then they would move on. And I wouldn't hear that around the same person twice.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing is, yes, we agree. Everybody's life matters. But the fact of the matter is, we're not acting like that.
Yeah.
And until we do,
then
we
black
can't
lives,
say
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's crazy because the one thing I hate, though, is when people do talk about Black Lives Matter and stuff, because I don't ever really speak on that stuff.
Right.
You know, because I just try to avoid it at all costs. It's not my profession. It's not my field of expertise. I don't really have one. I'm just a shit talker.
Just out here.
Yeah. But it's like when it comes to, when I hear people be like, "Oh, Black Lives Matter," like when it's white people that's always like anti anything black empowerment, or like when you hear some white people be like, "Why do they have to say this or that?" Or like, I was watching a TV show the other day, and basically they had handcuffed this white guy who was a part of like one of those tiki torch groups against the Black Lives Matter movement. And they arrested the guy, and he was like, "Why, when I put white power on my shirt, you know, it's an issue, but they can say black power, Black Lives Matter, Hispanics can wear whatever shirts they want, or black Mexicans can wear whatever shirts they want to wear empowering their group. Why is it not seen as racist?" And in my mind, I was kind of thinking, like, it's not seen as racist because we don't look at ourselves as superior to anyone else. We're just saying we want people to acknowledge that we have power.
Right.
We have purpose. We have a reason to be here. Mm-hmm. And it's an intentional reason, and it's not a negative reason. Right. I just don't understand racism, period, because I'm like, if somebody, and I told her this before a couple years ago, I said, if somebody asked me if I could change anything in the world or have anything I want, any amount of money, whatever, what would I want? And I was like, I would just want racism to stop, because if racism stopped, everybody be winning.
Exactly. Yes.
The money we watched Den of Thieves the other day, and it's like a part where they're getting rid of money. Like, we already know the government gets rid of like a certain amount of money. They erase the bills. They, you know, turn it into dust and make new bills. With $30 million that y'all are throwing away weekly or monthly, why not put that back into the community?
Right.
Yep.
Why not empower people who are working these hard ass jobs and give them bonuses yearly with stimulus. Those old bills. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. With a yearly stimulus to people who are truly working. Mm-hmm. Not the motherfuckers living off welfare. Not the people that are stealing from the system. But hardworking people like us that make anywhere between $50,000 and $100,000. But we still get fucked in taxes because we're trying to do right. We ain't got a shitload of kids. And like I told her, you get income tax back. And I'm like, well, I ain't getting much back. But if I wanted to sit up and get a whole bunch of girls pregnant and didn't want to be with them and put in it for a check, I could get damn near a pension.
Yeah, for real. Mm-hmm. For real.
So I feel like if you change racism, which it'll never go away. Sorry, white people. Sorry, black people. Sorry, anybody who thinks that is ever going to. As long as people are teaching these things, you can't stop people from teaching stuff. They got woods way out in Arkansas that you can't get to and stop them from implementing these thoughts in these people's heads.
And that goes to show how important it is what you pass down from generation to generation.
So important. Like, that's why, not to be funny, people be like, it's kind of go back to like Joe and him, because from what he's saying, he's an ally.
Right.
So it's like, it goes back to people being like, well, he's a white person, he's supposed to do this, or you'll have that pro-black person to a fault that'll say, well, your oppressor can't be your hero. Mm-hmm. He ain't trying to be nobody's hero. Nah. He's just trying to help change lives. Yeah. But some people are so far left, even black people, to where it's like, you missing the message. The point that you're trying to make and where you're trying to go, but equality, you can't get there without white folks.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think it was Dave Chappelle said on his latest special talking about apartheid ending, and said that should have been the bloodiest massacre in history, and it wasn't.
Nope.
Because Desmond Tutu and Nelson Mandela understood that the best way to make reparations is to work together and bring everybody on the same level and then move forward. And we can't, that's what we as allies, that's what everybody is trying to do to get there. And then, and that, that's the conversations when I have very difficult conversations with people who are white.
Yeah.
And they are, reason Trump got elected is because of Blacklash.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
Not backlash, blacklash.
That's the name of the podcast right there.
Blacklash.
Don't forget that shit. And I know you listen to the podcast enough now to know that sometimes it just blacklash is the name of the podcast. Thank you, Frank.
Yeah.
I got you, Frank, you good for something.
I got you, baby.
They say niggas ain't good for shit.
Hey, who you calling a nigga?
Yeah, I know, right?
Did I you did say use nigga? The ER, oh, too. Nigger. Yeah,
exactly. That's why I said. Go ahead, Joe. My
no,
bad.
It's okay. I was just saying that he got elected because people were worried that their status quo was going to be upended. Even if it was living in a trailer park, barely paying anything, they thought that was going to be upended because of the racism, the toxic racism that is given to them.
Oh, yeah, because Dave Chappelle was like, he ain't working for you.
Right.
He working for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's
and,
true.
Yeah, and that's heavy stuff. Man.
And you have to have the conversations with. And so there are some people I know that have come around. And I have to have the conversations and say, Trump, as an example, is not someone that's fighting for you.
Mm-hmm.
We as a white people have gotten a lot and taken a lot throughout our history. What we need to do in order to get ahead is to work with people. You can't cut people down to get ahead because that will only take you so far. You've got to work with everybody. And when you have the leader of the free world continually cutting people down in day to day, even people that are his allies
on Twitter.
Yeah. Then, you know, he's not looking out for anybody.
But how ironic is it that Republicans talk, because I don't want to just say white people, because it ain't just white people. Republicans want to put, they, it's like somebody wants to be in power, and no, and that means to be in power you have to be unfair at some point,
right? Mm-hmm.
So it's like when I hear Donald Trump talk about all this shit he talks about to make the country better, nigga, if you ain't talking about bringing people together and making sure that everybody has something, it doesn't have to be a socialist society, but it's like, if you don't, if you're not talking about improving everything for everybody across the spectrum, you ain't making America great.
Right.
Exactly.
America has never, when, even when I heard America, make America great, I didn't even think of Trump as a racist until I heard that. Because I was like, when has it ever been great?
Right.
When the Europeans came over and stole from the Native Americans, or when they came to Africa and tricked us, or in some of the black folks tricked themselves and tricked other people and helped them bring us over here. Like, America's never been great. Mm-hmm. This is the best time to be, as rough as it is right now. Right. This is the best time to be, because there was a time where there was no black millionaires. There was no black, no Hispanic or black. I got to get this shit.
Get
together.
It right, man.
Yes.
There was no Mexican millionaires.
I'm going to send this episode to Dr.
Latino.
Hill.
You know what I'm saying?
Latina.
But there was no other race that was really rich like that in America. Like, maybe in their own places, their own regions, their own demographic, but not
in America,
here.
Yeah.
So for all of these people to be able to be rich, to create something. And the thing I think that really scares the government right now and Trump is they see black people coming together.
Yeah.
Black Panther.
They caused that shit.
Yeah. Black Panther, people are seeing it as
a
movie, but Black Panther is a fucking movement. Yeah, to have DC Comics, Wolverine, and all of that, and Black Panther, first movie, has sold out everything by a black producer and a black director. And I'm going to be honest with you. What did I say the first time I saw that trailer? I was like,
yeah.
The graphics.
You're such a critic.
Because I'm a critic. I went to school for communication and, you know, movie, TV, all that shit. So when I saw it, I was like, I hope it worked.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
But because it's going to work anyway.
I think it is going to work. And then as they get more money, the graphics and the stuff will get better. But because of, you know, because what I've seen from Spider-Man and people who make, it's like, ooh, that's tough. DC. But the you can't knock the power that's coming behind it.
There's a lot of
you
power
cannot, and when people get mad, like they was talking about, it was a group of white people. They were saying, they were trying to pass something around on social media saying, go to Rotten Tomatoes and rate it bad because it was at 99.9% and nobody's there besides Black Panther, and the shit has not even come out. Wakanda on the rise.
Yeah. I will not comment on how many people I know shared that. Really? I unfriended quite a few people after that.
See, and that's the thing. The funny thing too for Black people is like we could go to work with white people, mm-hmm. and because Black people have this, we befriend everybody, mm-hmm. and it's almost a detriment to us. But we'll befriend everybody, and it may be a white person that they may not think they're racist because mm-hmm. it may be a Black person that they actually like. Mm-hmm. But as a whole, when they see success of Black people, it's like I ain't really feeling that shit.
Yeah. And this I don't want to participate. Panther, in.
Yeah, this shit rubbing me the wrong way. We don't ever get to see those white people. They do the shit on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how many people I've had, like, white dudes listen to my podcast and then they'll say something to me on Twitter. And I don't even get into it. I just be like, when they'll hit me in the inbox, I'll be like, nigga, unless you meet me, I'm not even physically responding.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because I address every race on this podcast. I don't hate white people. Right. I love white women.
We know.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I have nothing against any of this shit. But it's like, white people, what gets me is the ones that talk on social media.
Because they're not going to say this gangsters. Shit in your face.
Just like I told you that time when I was working at Capital One, and this white woman who was married was trying to get at me. Mm-hmm. And then I guess like her husband found like one of her messages to me on Facebook. And then he started saying stuff to me on Facebook, calling me a nigga, saying all this shit. And it went on for weeks, and I was just like, I'm going to respond this one time. And I just said, hey, brother, you can meet me at this place, at this parking lot, if you really feel that strongly about this. And I said, bro, I didn't fuck your wife. Your wife was emailing me. Mm-hmm. If you read our emails, you never saw me respond in any derogatory or mannish manner. You need to be checking your wife. This motherfucker said, I know that you tricked her or manipulated her to say these things. No, and I said, nigga, she didn't get the dick because if she did, she wouldn't even be with you. So don't try to make, I was like, bro, like you talking sideways. I didn't sleep with your wife, bro. But it was like, and it's like, I've had white homegirls that's married to white men. And they're like, when I first moved to Dallas, mm-hmm. we were talking about interracial dating at work. And a white girl was like, my husband told me, he asked me before we got married, have I ever been with any black guys? And he said, I told him no. She was like, but he told me if I had ever been with a black guy, and I found out about it, I'm divorcing you. Oh. She was like, what? And I was like, so you ain't never been with a black guy? She said, of course I have. I just can't tell him. Mm-hmm. But it's like, why?
But why would you want to be in that relationship?
Exactly. Because for me, it's like if a black woman is with a white man, it ain't going to make me not want to be with a black woman if I really want to be with her.
Not at all. That has no bearing on it.
I tell the story all the time about seeing this white dude with this black girl in Foot Locker before I moved to Dallas. And it was a white dude. This black girl was so fine. Like when he looked at me, I said, gave him the two thumbs up. I was like, bruh, glad you found it before me. You're doing a good job.
Kudos.
Yeah, man, because I just for me personally, I don't understand it. So, Joe.
You know, I did want to jump in. Sorry, before we jump to another thing, I wanted to say one thing as far as mm-hmm. tolerance that I forgot to mention is that as far as setting an example, my older sister, who's obviously white, she married a black man. And so my daughter's older cousin, we call her Aunt Bree because mm-hmm. there's such an age difference because it was from my dad's first marriage, the sister. She's biracial. So for us, it's easy to teach intolerance because she sees them all the time. And that's the norm. Yeah. And that's the thing is you got to normalize everything.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go ahead and say this, too. I think we're going to roll it. We're going to do another episode. I'm sorry.
Hey, I'm down.
The reason I say it is because, first of all, the people we were supposed to be meeting are not going to be able to make it. This is an authentic podcast.
Oh, okay.
So they're not going to be able to make it. We're going to do our real spill and tell because I don't mind talking about Joe to his face.
I can take it.
He's going to hear it anyway.
That's what I'm saying.
He listens to
every podcast.
And then he'll also be able to, you know, chime in on family when we talk about family in different perspectives. Mm-hmm. The thing that you said your sister is married to a black man.
Yes.
I always, like, we always talk about black people mm-hmm. on the podcast. Really, honestly, what would you think? Who was that? Was that Mike?
No, that was.
Do you know?
Nope.
Okay. Well, at least he was respectful to shut the door. I don't want to lie.
I
want to
push it.
I don't want to push it all the way. Well, Mike got the code, though, so you can push it all the way up. There we go. So, have you ever felt uncomfortable around black people?
No.
Where are you originally from?
Did you
from?
Grow up with around black people?
Yeah.
Okay, that's why.
So my dad is my dad's a minister. And we can get into that later if we want. Okay. But he is a sports chaplain. So I've been around athletes my whole life.
Yeah.
He works for
FC. Trying to say only niggas.
I know. That's what I was about to say. I was getting ready.
Come on, Joe.
There's three of us.
You doing good, too, man.
I was like, he made it sound so good. But is that all we good for?
No, please. I'm messing with you.
Let me scrape that egg off my head. Hold on a second. Let me take my foot out of my mouth. No, I was just saying. So we would have... Man, now I'm just kind of all over the place.
No, you're good. But,
no, so I grew up in Bedford, and I still live there. And okay. So it's my friend group is very diverse because that is a very diverse area of Dallas-Fort Worth.
Yeah.
And then going to Trinity High School, and then there's a lot of diversity.
Oh, you went to Trinity?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you was at the football god school.
Yes. I played hockey, so.
Of course you did. Right.
So just to wind it up a little bit more. But no, so I was around that in my day-to-day life. Around church, it was a little bit more white-filtered. And then when my dad would take us to the games, you know, I'm seeing a lot of diversity everywhere, and I'm not seeing... I feel it is ignorant as a white person to say I don't see color, because you have to if you're going to affect change.
Bro, thank you for saying that. Yes, when I hear white folks say that shit, I'm like,
you see
shut
it.
The fuck up, you stupid. I'm sorry.
It's
this
bullshit.
Is real conversation.
I call bullshit. Bullshit.
Yeah, and I'll be like, you stupid mother. I don't even got to say you white person. You stupid motherfucker. You stupid.
And I'll kind of go over here and say that the white people I know that say that are trying to be allies, but they are being racist in the fact that they're holding black people up as a trophy.
Yeah.
Like, I have this many black friends, right. or this person's so cool, they're my black friend. Like, okay, people are not trophies.
Joe has to get at least 100 followers from the listeners.
Because
they're going to be like, this nigga needs to be the spokesperson for white folks. You know how everybody's trying to, you know how to try to make black people like Charles Barkley and people like that the spokesperson. Yes. They're going to be like, make Joe Shaw the spokesperson Joe for Shaw. All white folks.
It's just, it pisses me off because, no, you have to, if you cannot see color or sexual orientation, if that's what you're trying to affect change, you can't affect change because you are blind to the day-to-day issues that maybe you struggle with or that people around you struggle with. And so you're not having those critical conversations. And so for me, we grew up and I love my parents and they are less racist than their parents.
Yeah.
But there are times when I'll catch them and they'll say a comment here and there and I'll correct them to their face. I'll say that, hey, you might not have meant that racist, but that was a racist comment. Yeah. I need you to rethink that. And to my parents' credit, they're very receptive and they work on it and they're constantly working on it. And so for me, that was the normal, was seeing people of all different races be my friends and interact and just all hang out, break bread together and learn and grow. And so
what are your biggest fears as a white father? Because when he finishes, I'll let you talk about yours, because I know the fears have to be different. Yes. Because I know for black families. Okay, so what do you fear about your kids, Artesian?
Just about them not coming home or them being caught up in certain situations because of their skin color.
What do you fear about for your kids?
Pretty much the same thing. More so for my son, but also for my daughter. Just but at the end of the day, the concerns and the fears are surrounding their race.
Yeah. What do you fear for your kids, Joe?
My biggest fear for my kids is that they're going to become much more racist than me. I'm not racist. That was worded incorrectly. What I mean by that is that...
Say, get Joe, your are you an agent or are you an ally?
Don't make me get a noose, Joe.
So what I mean by that is that I am doing a lot of legwork to help my relatives and my friends to become more allies and see that we're all in this struggle together.
Yeah.
My biggest fear is that my son is going to be on the front page news with a tiki torch.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I mean by that.
I got you.
Or that my daughter is going to be like that in a different way or maybe in the same way. And it would cause me to go, what have I not taught you anything? Like, where did I go wrong?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that fear, like, my fear is not that they're not going to come home, because I expect them to all the time.
Right.
It is a given, and that is my privilege, that I know that they're going to come home and they're going to be safe for the most part. I got to be honest, there was a lot of stuff circulating around about little girls being wooed into child sex slave, and that is something that keeps me up at night. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that is on a different level. Sorry, man.
No, you're fine.
That is on a different level than the other aspect, because I know they're going to come home. Yeah. That's what I take for granted. Honestly, but I worry that they're going
to be recording too.
They're going to be different. They're going to be different than who I am.
You know what's interesting too? I'll be honest with you. When I talk about my kids and I think about my children, I know for me, I try to make sure that I'm pro-black. You know what I'm saying? I'm a black man. I'm living in America. My kids, you know what I'm saying? We are definitely pro-African individuals.
Yeah.
But my concern in teaching my children that is that they get too far over to the extreme. You know what I'm saying? Pro-black and or stage three.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Black person.
You've been listening to that Tinder episode. I have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. But just to the point where they see themselves as superior and then everybody else as inferior. Like, that's a concern of mine, because that's not the view that I'm trying to teach. But I think that when you expose them to, you know, the greatness of blackness, I just don't want them to get the wrong message that, okay, so we are great and everybody else is weak. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that that's probably the issue that we have with white people.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That white, that white superiority.
So how would you feel if your daughter dated a white man?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm not going to lie.
Be honest, nigga.
That's what I'm saying. It would be a concern because only because of the stigma that they say, okay, well, if, you know, it's so general, but they say, oh, if a white chick dates a black dude or vice versa, I don't know what happens in the white community.
Yeah.
But when black people date white people, like for me, if I dated a white chick, the first thing black people would say in a general sense is that, oh, well, he has issues with black women because he doesn't think a black woman is enough.
Like, is enough.
You know what I'm saying? Like, no, there's a problem.
Like,
he got issues with his mom.
White women just nasty.
I mean, and my mom is not nasty. Okay.
Hey.
Yeah.
How would you feel if your daughter dated a black man?
I wouldn't have any issue with it.
You need to be getting all. This. You see, you done dropped it. No. I need you on Snapchat where it's going straight on through.
I'm on Snap. I was just trying to edit Frank's part.
Well, just send that nigga shit through. And then we visit and cue it up because I want to ask this on Snap.
On Snap.
Okay. People can see this, man. Joe so real. He like I feel
I'm
like Shanae. Yeah.
Open book.
Okay, so, I'm ready.
All right, you ready?
Yeah.
All right, so Joe, how would you feel if your daughter dated a black guy?
I wouldn't have an issue with it at all, because to me, if he's a good dude, I don't have a color. Right. I don't have a problem with what color he is at all. But I tell you, a lot of people I know, and this goes to like a stage three white person who has that white guilt, like too much of it to where or they're like, I don't see color. I knew a coworker who was excited when her daughter brought home a black guy. Like,
she was excited.
She was too excited.
Awesome, get out shit.
Like,
yeah,
it is. No. Yeah. But for real, she was. And that was the point where I said, I asked her, I'm like, do you view black people as a trophy? And she got highly offended. But that was the point, is I wanted her to think about that. Because,
and that's true.
I said, is he a good dude? She's like, I don't know. But he's black. Yeah. I went, that's not. You're losing sight. You're losing sight of the focus.
Because every black dude ain't got a big dick. So don't be like, oh, my daughter's going to be getting dick down.
And what man thinks like
ask
that?
Ask some of these black women out here. They're going to be like, all these niggas dicks is not big.
That's a myth.
We've been diluted.
Now, some of us do have big dicks.
I'll be honest, I was talking to an ex-girlfriend the other day. And she was telling me, she was talking about how she was doing a procedure. So before the procedure, and my ex is, my ex is Hispanic. She's Puerto Rican and black. And she said they wanted her to put a catheter in before surgery. She said she went to pull the sheet back and was like, I'm not going to do a catheter. Basically, as I'm going to make a long story short, she made me, I had to sit through it and listen to it over the phone. His dick was bigger than a catheter. So even if they would have stuck the catheter in this motherfucker, it would have just been halfway in. So when she told the doctor, the surgeon, she was like, I'm not going to be able to do a catheter. He was like, why didn't you do a catheter? You know, so they started the surgery. The surgery, I forgot what it was on, but it was from like right up under his rib cage to like the navel. But the doctor did something and like whatever he was cleaning up with, it whipped the gown back. I guess the nigga had meat. Because he was like, whoa. He was like, whoa. Well, I guess the myth is true. And she was like, no, it's true for this guy.
Right? Yeah.
But the next black guy may not be that. Right. As I'm listening to this story, I'm kind of like, how do you feel? Because I'm pretty sure a catheter can go in my dick. So I was like, this nigga must have had meat if he couldn't get a catheter in. So it's like certain things. And it's crazy because working in the medical field, too, is funny because I used to work in the medical field. And I remember them trying to put a catheter in the guy. And I was, and it wasn't even, like, he was just an average guy, you know, average penis, whatever. But a catheter, do you know what that is?
I do.
Like, it's like putting a straw up through the man's pee hole.
Yeah.
Bruh. Uh-uh. Y'all say you're here as a woman. I'm pretty sure childbirth is painful. You did yours natural, right?
Yes, I did.
But
oof. Yeah, I would like you to change the subject like right now.
You feel everything shrivel up.
Yeah, you really do. That's what I mean. But you, and I try to tell people too, a dick is an amazing thing. It's a lot of things.
It really we is.
Know you do know that, bro. Yes. In the wintertime, if you have hair, it helps in different ways. If you don't have hair in the wintertime,
yes.
it can be different for
it can
you.
Be different.
If you get in the shower, I have to shower. Like, and I always tell people, you can't judge a motherfucker when he's just flaccid.
No.
You can't.
You cannot.
I was talking to a homegirl the other day, and she was.
No, you really can't.
I was talking to a homegirl.
He was adamant about that.
What? No, because I'll be honest with much. I mean, okay, man.
As long as you ain't got butt dick.
The reality is, I'm saying, if I was one of them dudes, if you judged me based on that, then you would misjudge me.
And this nigga is African.
That's what I'm saying. I'm African.
He's from Liberia.
Yeah, you know.
And see, that's the thing, too. The dude from the story, he was African.
Yeah, you can't believe that.
Yeah.
But it's like, what was I about to say?
Damn, you had a great point, too.
I did. I really did, because I'm losing it. Shit.
It's time.
Time to chime in, Joe.
Yeah, exactly. Hold on. We almost done with the first hour. Give me 1 second. Hold on. Let me check this out.
Blacklash.
Because I did have a question for him. Give me 1 second.
Sure.
Being a father. Of course. So, you know what?
Can I just say I like how they came prepared? They both have notes.
Niggas of any race. Frank came in with his little pad.
Have a little pad.
And you know what? It reminds me of my mom at church.
Yeah.
Because my mom, anytime when she was at the service, she was writing on the thing. I noticed it. She's been doing that since I was a kid.
So and what I was Frank like, and Joe. I haven't seen nobody do that.
Wait, you can tell
your
story. Hold on. As Frank, what Frank and Joe are doing is they have a pad apiece, and I guess his thoughts come to them, or they had stuff that they may want to ask.
Yeah.
Like they're prepared. Mm-hmm. My mom does that. Like, if she goes to church, or even if she's watching a television show, and that's where I get it from, because you see me do it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be watching a TV show, and like, I'll have my pad, and it's like, I'm like, this podcast material.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
from my perspective, because content is king.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't understand. But see, I think the funny thing about the reality is podcast, and not even just pumping it up or gassing it up, literally most of the but no, for real though, most of the podcast is not scripted,
right?
Like, you see me open my phone, but I'm really not past this point
right.
of the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
What that allows us to do is get people's real intentions mm-hmm. of the podcast. We were watching before Arteza came to my house this morning, but we were watching Breakfast Club, and this is guy, what's Bobby Lights?
Yeah.
He's Trina's cousin.
Okay.
He's a gay guy. Loving hip hop Miami.
All right.
And one of the things that I loved about watching the interview was like how real he was in that interview. He's a flamboyant gay guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, ain't nothing wrong with that shit.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about, you know, he talked about how he didn't have his father in his life. And he was like, that's not why I'm gay though.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, my father could have been in my life and I'd have been gay regardless.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, this is who I am. I just wish I had my father in my life to where he could have been there for when I was going through these things as people talking about me.
Mm.
He would have been there to protect me.
Right.
Right.
I'm come from the country. I've said this before. I used to be homophobic as shit.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got here and realized that gay people are like my best fucking friend.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Gay people are very supportive.
Loyal.
Mm-hmm.
They will spread the word. Even from when we was watching, have you ever watched The Get Down on Netflix?
Yes.
Remember when they was talking about
that
nigga may have black skin under there. You fooling us. Woogie boogie nigga. Like, but no, it's like, I mean, just this is the thing. If nobody takes anything from this podcast, me and Arteza talk all the time about maybe it'll work. Frank always amped
me
up.
No, you
like,
say maybe.
I do say maybe. Yeah, I do. It's me.
Yeah.
And Frank and other people, I was like, hey man, y'all are talking about real shit. These are the type of podcasts, and I told Arteza, didn't I say this yesterday? I said, I'm geek for this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Because to have a white guy who's open and willing to talk, this is how shit changes.
Right.
How can we change if we don't even know who the fuck we talking about?
Right.
If we don't even know how they think,
mm-hmm.
how can you? Some of the, Dalton, my homeboy, shout out to Dalton.
Mm-hmm.
He used to be my manager at my job. He was a white guy, younger kid. And he always used to come to me telling me stories. Because I worked for Path Advantage during the height of all this racism and shit mm-hmm. in America. And he was like, he always used to tell me about things that he went through from his perspective, how black people treated him
mm-hmm.
just because he was white. And I think a lot of times we get so caught up in what black people go through that we do forget that it can be tough for white people too.
Yeah.
It ain't just, I mean, okay, you know, we talk about you got white privilege and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But how many times have I talked to and tell Arteza, I'd be like, being a leader is hard. So if you got white privilege, it's kind of like being a leader to where it's like you got a lot on your shoulders to where, not to be funny,
yeah.
if you, Charlamagne the guy says it all the time, If you are a white man and you're not making a certain amount of money or you're not a success, you fucked up your privilege.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We don't even have that privilege. So it's like, how can you feel as a white man in America where you have these doors automatically open for you,
right,
and you may not be as successful as you want to be? How hard is that for those people? Mm-hmm. But black people don't never think about that shit. We want the crown a lot of times. Heavy is the head that wears that motherfucker. Wears, yep. We know that. So in your situation,
Joe,
He's white.
Situation. I was like, what?
Yeah. In your, it being,
from your perspective.
From your perspective. That's why people are on the pod. I literally smoked a little bit this morning. I don't know. Frank had a heavy hand. And Joe brought
Speaking
beer,
of,
and I'm drinking beer now.
Can you pour me a drink?
I got you. Yeah. Get one of them Taco Cabana cups, girl.
No,
yeah.
I want you.
And see, we're gonna have to, and see, the thing about it
I
is,
came with my own cup.
Our producer had to go to a meeting, so we really got to just talk straight through.
Yeah.
You see, that's why I said there's no need for nobody to get. It's actually perfect timing. It's good that everybody else didn't come because we were supposed to meet some other people at 2:00. Mm-hmm. It's good they didn't come because we literally got to roll right through this. He was like, "If you need me, just text me. I'll be right across the hall." Yeah. I don't even have Mike's number. Mike, if you listen to this podcast, nigga, I don't even have your number.
How am I supposed to text you?
Yeah. I don't even know where Mike went.
That's my job. I have
your number. Because I was like, he talking about some text me. So we about to roll into the second hour. Because I was literally going to be like, we'll take a break. We can't take a break because I don't know.
No, you can take a break. It'll just be silence and then you know how you edit it.
Yeah, he'll edit it. But, you know. So, well, since we're going to take a break before we get to the next episode, and we're going to do the real spill episode next, and we still have a few questions for Joe, too. But, Joe, tell them where they can find you at on social media and the podcast.
Absolutely. So, if you're looking for Detox Podcast, you can check us out, Detox, D-T-A-L-K-S, podcast.com. And then we're at Detox Podcast on all social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. For me specifically, I'm on Twitter at Detox, D-T-A-L-K-S, Joe on Twitter, and then at JoeShaw05 on Instagram.
Joe, before we get ready to queue up for the next episode,
sure.
Would you ever date a black woman?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you're married now.
Well, yeah. My wife's going to be like,
hold up. What the fuck do you mean?
I was like, you answered that too fast.
Real quick. Yeah.
That's what she's going to say.
Yeah, but if you but if you were single or if you weren't married, like, what is it that, okay, I'll start this off.
Okay, sure.
I'll answer my part and then I'll let you. I was going to say, what is it that you like or love about black people? And I'll start by what I like and love about white people. I love the fact that white people do give exposure. They expose themselves. They're very open-minded. Mm-hmm. That's why it takes me back a lot of times when white people are racist, because I'm like, as a whole, white people are very, not to be, let's give a little white props right quick. Even though Columbus came over here and stole, that motherfucker did have the balls to go back when there was no GPS. He didn't know how to get anywhere. They took risk to find somewhere. Mm-hmm. They found a new land, even though they came and stole it. They found a new land and took a risk to do that. White people are very explorative. They're very open-minded. I've always respected that. Not to be funny, that's why when we go back to talking about white women and sex and being interracial dating, and I tell people all the time, a lot of black dudes, it's not that they don't like black women. It's just that white people expose themselves to things younger, to where
earlier in life,
to where it's like, by the time they're 25, what you're learning as a black person at 45, they've been doing for years. And that's what gets them ahead of the game. So I just respect white people and their ability to expose each other to new things, being open-minded. And the best thing that you can have as a friend is a white person if they're not racist.
Right.
Because they will go to bat. They will go to bat for you. They do know a lot of shit. They do have a lot of access.
Mm-hmm.
And the sooner we quit thinking that, of course, let's be honest, we don't need white people to be successful. We don't. Right. But does it make it easier to have the access to people that can say, this is a good guy, not a good black guy?
Right.
And that's one thing about white people. If they're real and they're not racist, they don't even mention your race. Exactly. You don't know these motherfuckers are black or Mexican until they show up. I dated a white girl. I went to her house. They played a prank on me. Her daddy acted like, how dare you date a black dude? He didn't even acknowledge me. Got in the kitchen, talked to the mother. She was kind of like cookie cutter, making cookies and shit that night. And then the dad came in, he ignored me again in the kitchen. And then after a while, I remember the girl I was dating was Sarah, and I was like, hey, I'm about to get up out of here. I don't think this shit is, it's
safe
for me to be here. And before I got ready to leave, the dad was like, I got you. He was like, I ain't racist. He said, I just wanted to mess with you a little bit, ruffle your feathers, you know. But the best thing you can have is a white friend if they're open-minded, and they're about change, mm-hmm. and they're intentional. Not saying that white people are better than black people. No. Not saying that white women are better than black women. But if you could play a video game without the cheat codes and struggle through it, how great would it be to play a video game with the cheat codes, with the extra lives right. and the guns? All the guns. You ain't got to find all of that shit. You got it already. That's what allies. Warp zones. That's how strong that is.
Yeah, for real.
Where are you at from social media? You already text Mike? Okay. Where can they find you at on social media?
BlackGhost75 on social media, Instagram only. And also Melanin Origins.
Facebook ain't letting this nigga live at all.
And I've been trying.
He lost his privilege.
That black privilege is gone.
I've been trying to get it. They got some pictures of mine. But check us out at Melanin Origins, and that is on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Melanin Origins.
They're good books. Company. They're good books. My daughter loves books. Joe got a couple.
Arteezy, where can they find you on social media? I know you're not taking clients.
Yeah, I'm all across.
But we still got to give you a shout out.
All across social media at No Arteezy. That's KNOWARTEESIA.
I don't have my script and I'm not reading the script, but you can find me on Instagram, Sir Robert Poe. That's my personal page. Anthony Roberts on Facebook. The reality is I'm on Facebook. Pretty much any social media website. Mm-hmm. If you want to keep up with the reality is we about to revamp. Like, Frank, I'm so excited, bro. We about to level up.
Can't wait.
Arteezy working on some shit. Poster Boy working on some shit.
Poster Boy,
bro, you just make me feel so special.
Oh, he got the high pitch.
Poster Boy make me feel so special because the shit he does, like the graphics and anything mm-hmm. we put out, is so professional.
They're mm-hmm. really good.
That's what I told him because the other day he sent us something so that I had requested and you were oh my God, this looks so professional.
It was so dope.
I was like, you got a motherfucking professional doing it.
I know.
That's why.
Yeah, man.
Hey, Arteezy a cuss, man. She's serious right now.
Yeah. It's like my mama, bro. My mama was talking to me a couple weeks ago and she was mad about something and she was like, I don't give a shit no more. I said, Mom, that's like the fourth curse word I've heard.
That's major for your mom, even more so than mine.
Yeah, because I was like, my mama don't curse at all, bro. So, again, man, if you want to follow us, you can follow us on The Reality Is. That's THA The Reality Is. If you want to be on the podcast, you can email us by going to info@therealityis.com. The funny thing about this is we're about to do another show. It's going to be another episode just right after this one. I just want the listeners to know because sometimes they probably be thinking we doing shit like a week apart. No. What's that? Did you ever see? That made me think about, what was that Whitney Houston and Kevin Costner movie? Bodyguard.
Oh, Bodyguard.
And remember the guy who had masturbated on the sheets? He was like, no. That's what it made me think about. But for real, always remember, man, y'all inhale courage, exhale success. We about to roll back into episode 171. But again, it'll be Joe Shaw. It'll be Frank Lincoln. It'll be Arteezy. We're going to be a real spill, me and Arteezy. We're going to talk about how we met Joe, how we feel about Joe. We're going to talk about family. We're going to talk about relationships. And we're going to get a little bit more personal. We ain't going to do generic shit. We're going to make y'all feel a little bit uncomfortable on this next hour.
I'm ready.
Mike, where you at?
I'm not ready.
You're going to be ready. If you ain't ready, you better get ready. Mike, where you at?
Where's
Mike?